This is the Geek Dads, the podcast of GeekDad.com on the Wired Blog Network. This is episode 27.
Hello again, everybody. This is Ken Denmead, editor of GeekDad.com, and you have found yourself again at the Geek Dads podcast. This is episode 27, and we have a smaller group today. We had a couple of folks that couldn't make it in either through illness or good Geek Dads taking classes and expanding their minds. However, we have Russ and Pat today. So Russ, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thanks. I'm coming to you from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where fall has hit. I woke up this morning to 45 degrees outside, Fahrenheit, that is, for our American listeners. And we're presently sitting at 51 degrees Fahrenheit. I think we got to a high of about 64 today. But it was bright and sunny, perfect day here. I love that kind of weather. And so I'm doing well.
Excellent. Excellent. Sounds beautiful. I have to come to Milwaukee sometime. It just sounds
you
like
should.
A
you
nice
should.
Place. In, the late summer or...
Well, that would be more California-like weather at that point, yeah.
Right, so nice. Okay. And Mr. Patrick Orndorff, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. I'm coming to you from Houston, Texas, where it is still quite summerish, and it's also hurricane season, and we're keeping an eye towards the Gulf even as we speak.
Yeah, now did you guys see any results from Gustav?
No, it took a sharp right turn before it got to us, so we were expecting to have a little bit of wind and rain, and it was we had more issues with earlier storms than we did with that one. So.
Oh, okay.
And it's looking like this one might be going south of us. We'll see. But right now, most of the computer models are showing it heading towards South Texas and the Brownsville area, but it's going to be a couple of days before we know that.
Yeah, it's already been a really scary season down there.
Oh, yeah.
The meteorologist in me is looking at weatherunderground.com right now, and the models are actually showing it coming in just west of you guys. But unfortunately, that means you're going to get the northeast side of the storm, which is typically the worst.
The dirty side, yes.
Yeah. Four of the five models that Weather Underground tracks right now is showing it curving up into Texas now. So you'll get some wind and rain.
Here's a good question for Geek Dads in general, since this is the kind of thing we tend to be geeky about. What are your favorite online internet weather sites? Whether there's Weather Underground, there's weather.com. I know there's a couple of good. What's this? I've seen a lot about Storm Pulse lately.
I haven't played with that one. I tend to gravitate to either Weather Underground or go to AccuWeather. I like the AccuWeather post.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I am hardcore Weather Underground guy. It just gives me, having a bachelor's in meteorology, it's exactly the kind of stuff that I want. No offense to AccuWeather, I interviewed with them many, many years ago and they turned me down. So,
But, so obviously a bunch of fools.
obviously. No, I forecast weather for 6 months and hated every second of it. So no love lost there. But Weather Underground is just, I can find what I need to find very quickly, and it's a great site, in my opinion.
Awesome. That would be a good thing to hear from our people in the comments, our listeners. And we will apologize to our listeners this time around. Once again, I had trouble getting the kludgy little pieces together to actually live cast this podcast, and I will be looking dedicatedly in the next couple of weeks for an alternative solution. I've been using, and maybe if there are any good Mac heads out there, I've been using Audio Hijack Pro with Soundflower on my laptop to hijack the line in and the microphone in, and then try and feed them through the system audio to therefore be the input for Ustream TV. And I'm thinking I need to find another resource, because half the time I don't know if it's me. It's probably user error, and I can't get the settings right, or it seems like there are steps that I should be taking in a specific order to get it work, and if I don't get them in the right order, it doesn't work. And that's just, you know, that's too much of a pain in the butt for me. So if any of our listeners who are Mac heads have a better solution for it, I know there's, I think Ambrosia may have a new system out that might be easier, or if anybody else does, let me know about it.
I will put money on our listeners that they will come up with a very elegant solution for us.
I think so. Just so everybody understands the setup, I use a primary machine to record with Audio Hijack Pro and Skype to feed all of the channels, you know, mine on one channel, and then all of the other side of the podcast into another channel. It all records as an AIFF with Audio Hijack Pro, and then I edit everything in GarageBand. And then I have a second machine, a laptop, which is the broadcast machine for the live feed, and I'm using Audio Hijack Pro and Ustream on that. And it's worked about four times out of, I think, the seven or eight that we've tried it, and it just gets, you know, I do everything that I think I should, and it doesn't work, so... Sorry, I was a little bit behind the screens there.
Is that a rant?
No, you know what? There's a good start to the rant. You know what? let's start our rants for the evening. So, I think topic number one for discussion, hopefully this won't be too one sided. Either Patrick or Russ, have you guys had a chance to download and play Spore yet?
I haven't had a chance to download the entire game. I've just been playing with the Creature Creator, of course, for quite some time. But okay. I just now, I mean, literally 2 hours ago, finally got a high-speed internet connection to my apartment.
Oh, wow.
I have been a Luddite for the past 3 weeks. I've had no internet at home. I've had no TiVo. I have been, basically, I've just had one television with basic cable. And that's it, and my iPhone, and I have been ready to beat myself against a wall for the past 3 weeks. But now at least I have the internet connection going on, so that's a good thing. And then if I get the DVR hooked up here in the next couple of weeks, life will be good once again.
You'll survive.
Yes.
Oh man, how about you, Russ?
Likewise, I've only had the Creature Creator. I've not downloaded Spore yet. It's been interesting to watch some of the reviews, and maybe I'll hold my comments until after you've given your talk here.
Okay. All right. I will launch into this, and the first thing I will say, and I sort of spoke a little bit about in that little mini review I did on Monday, is I noticed it's been getting a lot of negative press. I guess what seems almost suspiciously like a concerted effort by people on Amazon to trash it because they say of an obtrusive DRM system. It's gotten like hundreds, if not like over 1,000 one-star or no-star reviews on Amazon. Primarily, it seems, because people are complaining about the DRM, supposedly, and this is supposedly on the Windows box. I'm going to tell you what I've read, but I don't know this firsthand, is that it's a very specific sort of like a three-step clearing process to like, you know, prove that you bought it and it's your serial number and you're installing it on your machine. So you know, it's one of those annoying little things, and supposedly there's sort of like a mechanism built in so that if you install it, try to install it more than three times, it tells you no, you can't do it, and you have to call up for a new unlock or something. Not unlike what's been going on with Windows in the last couple of years. So that's what I hear, and supposedly that's what's driving some sort of overwhelming public outcry through Amazon. What I also hear is that, you know what, it's kind of a load of stuff, because there are a number of other very popular titles out there right there that use exactly the same system. And while you may be anti-DRM in general, you know what? Get over it. If that's what these companies need to do to protect their intellectual property, then that's what they're going to do. Either decide not to buy it or move on, but don't trash the game for for that. You know, trash the game if you don't like the gameplay, or if there, you know, there's something boring or it doesn't work. But I think it's a little bit silly and a little bit childish to purposefully kill something like that or put a damper on something like that because of a choice that was made like that. And I'll have to say, from the Mac side of things, there is no such problem. It was a breeze to install. Now, you know, I haven't tried installing it three times. I don't imagine I'm going to have that kind of problem, but I don't know. And maybe I'd change my tune if I ran into something like that. But right now, it's been a complete breeze, and I haven't seen any problems like that. And I've been playing it, and it's a fun, fun game. It's, you know, if you've ever enjoyed either playing one of the sim type games, or even Civilization, this is a game you're going to love. And it's really immersive, and it's very imaginative, and it's really cool to be. It's sort of a number of games put together with common themes running through it, but the stages you get to go through are really, really interesting. You start off at this single cell organism stage where you basically decide whether you're gonna kill and eat other amoebas or you're gonna, you know, eat algae, and you have a sort of small level creature creator tool at that stage. After you've earned DNA points, you can add flagella or add little pokers to attack or little things like that. So you're doing little bits of evolution at that stage. And then you graduate, you get to significantly modify your creature and when it decides to go up on land, once you've earned enough points to go up on land. And then it gets legs, and you can add arms, and you can do most of the things that you see in the creature creator you can do now. And so then you are a land creature, and it's a matter of, you know, survival against other species on land. Whether, you know, and if you killed and ate more of your fellows while you're in the water, you're probably more likely to be a carnivore. Whereas the other way around, you might have been more likely to be an herbivore, or you can make it as a omnivore too. And so you're going around, you're either fighting with other species, making friends with other species, or finding little things here and there, sort of discoverables that will give you more items to add to your creatures that will give you better tools and abilities to do things like different arms and legs and eyes and ears and armor and things to make you prettier and more attractive and things like that. And so you go through a whole couple of hours at that stage and get through your success there. Then you get to make your final step of evolution. This would be sort of your final stage with the creature creator to make yourself look like how you're going to look for the rest of eternity. And then you go to a tribal stage, and you have now formed a tribe. And now the game becomes all about hunting and gathering and domesticating animals. And, you know, for every tribe that you either destroy or make friends with, and for animals that you domesticate and things like that, you build your totem up, and you get more tools, and eventually you will become a civilization. And once you get to civilization stage, you get to build yourself a city and start managing a city and having to deal with other city-states around your planet. And that's about as far as I've gotten. But I know also once you get beyond that stage, once you've united your planet, you're going to get to go out in space and start dealing with other civilizations. So it's really, really cool and really fascinating. And I have had a ton of fun with it, and I wish I had, you know, about 100 more hours to go just sit and play with the darn thing. But,
well, that's why you have an iPhone.
Exactly. And yes, I do have the game on the iPhone now, too.
Oh, man, you're hardcore.
Oh, nice.
Which is actually basically just a variation on the Amiibo level.
Okay.
So it's not full on, and at this point, it does not seem like you can trade things back and forth with the desktop game, although that would be awesome.
While you were ranting, I went out to Amazon, and there are 1,883 customer reviews. Mm-hmm. 1,743 of them are one-star ratings. And so clearly, there's been a, you know, and you know, when you look through the comments, clearly it's all around the DRM.
Right. So does I think that not smack to you of an organized campaign rather than 1,700, you know, good-hearted people that just were so frustrated by this terrible thing in this game? No, I don't think so. I think it's a bunch of schmucks
planning. I wouldn't say organized. I would say piling on.
Yeah, I would say the same thing too. As you know, whenever you start talking about DRM, all you have to do is just say DRM, and then you know everybody comes out of the woodwork and says, "Oh, this is horrible." And you know, since you know, especially since Spore is such a large profile release, you know, everybody's going to jump on it and say, "Well, it's you know just terrible because of this and that and the other thing." And like you say, it has nothing to do with the game itself. It's just people trying to get their pile on opinion out there.
Yeah, and you know, and maybe organized is a little too strong. I'm not saying that somebody, you know, a group of 1,200 were on this mailing list and were just lying in wait for the chance to do this. I'm thinking more along the lines of, you know, a couple dozen guys started doing it and then left some messages on some other message board somewhere and said, "Hey, wouldn't it be funny if we all went over and trashed the game?" Just because we're a little disgruntled that this company is using the same DRM that other companies have used on other games. And, you know, they decided to take a shot at EA, who's the big guy, and they figure he can take it. And
yeah, I see a couple things. I think the DRM is certainly kind of the lightning rod getting people going negative. You know, even if they've got the game and they're enjoying it, it's one of those things that, you know, just makes them go negative very quickly. The other thing that I see based on looking at some of the reviews, there was no way this could live up to the hype. So you're going to have people that are absolutely disappointed in the game.
Yeah.
However well they like it, or however many people truly enjoy the game, because of the hype, because of the amount of time people had to wait for this game to come out, it just couldn't meet the expectations that people had built up.
So does that mean that Duke Nukem Forever is going to get half a star?
It's going to go into negative numbers, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Unless that one is so much fun it comes out the other side, I don't know.
Right.
And, you know, just cruising through the reviews, I looked at the Ars Technica review of this. And really, bottom line, it wasn't until you got to kind of that Civilization space era segment of the game that they felt it was real compelling. Before that, they described it really as tutorials. The amoeba stage and everything like that up to the tribal stage was really tutorials to teach you how to play the Civilization side and the space side. And given that it's EA, you would expect that with like Civ 3, Civ 4, those kind of games.
Yeah.
You would expect that to work its way in. The other thing that their concern was really that they're leaving a lot of holes. There was a lot of holes. There wasn't as much depth, and that they fully expected, you know, $200 worth of expansion packs over the next year that would, you know, fill out some of these sections of the game. So that's what led me to think that the hype just, you were never going to satisfy the bulk of people trying to download this game and initially play this game. And that's probably, along with just the DRM stuff and piling on, led to the, you know, all the one-star reviews on Amazon.
Could be true. Could be very true. But so I'll just, you know, just to be a voice in the wilderness, it's a fun game. I'm enjoying it. And two good things about it being is that, you know, they're talking about there's not a huge amount of depth. I don't know. It seems good to me, having played, you know, plenty of Civilization in my time and similar games. What's been nice about it is that it hasn't made me feel like an idiot. I've been able to get through it pretty well. It doesn't punish you severely for failure.
Okay.
So that if your species dies at any given stage, you go back just a little bit.
Okay.
And you get to try again. So it's very positive in moving forward in that way. And the other side of it, which we're only starting, I think, to scratch the surface of everybody playing it, is this whole massively single-player online concept that they've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That right now is that the game is networked, and that when you share your creations to the master network, they will pop up in other people's games.
Okay.
So we are, as we play the game, we are actually making content for the game for other people.
Which is a really cool concept.
Which is a very cool concept. So that ultimately, when everybody gets to the space level, we're going out and exploring that galaxy. We're actually going to go see other people's planets who have been playing the game. And yeah, I
wonder once it gets out into the space level, how much timing will have to do with how, you know, creatures react to each other, you know, whether the hardliners that are, you know, trying to evolve their characters as quickly as possible will have any kind of advantage, you know, in making contact with others, or whether it kind of levels out once you get up to the spacefaring race level.
I mean, I have a feeling it doesn't work like a massively multiplayer online game, is that you're not actively playing against other people once you get there. It's that once your space civilization has been established, then whatever are the parameters of that civilization, including the appearance of the creature, the appearance of all of the tech that you designed for your civilization, and all of the parameters that go into the culture, all of those are a database file somewhere, and those are what are loaded onto your hard drive, and that's what you meet when you get out in space. You're not actually going to be vying with someone actively. You're vying with the thing that they created, which is then given a game AI.
Right.
That's pretty geeky.
And that's, you know, that's where the you know, everyone who, realistically, based on what I've heard so far, the majority of people have tended towards the pure carnivore, pure world domination.
It seems like the easiest track.
That's the easy track, because if you do that and you're successful at it, well, then you get to go to space. Right. But when you get to go to space, you're up against a whole bunch of other pure carnivore, pure, you know, world domination, galaxy domination, now the diplomacy, now the other aspects of, you know, again, I fall back to the Civ 3, Civ 4 realm. Right. Those kind of things start falling into place, and you got to start playing a game versus land grab.
Right. And so I think it's going to be more interesting. You know, obviously, yeah, I did the carnivore first time around. I am completely, you know, I want to get through into space once. Then I am definitely going to go back and play it as at least an omnivore, if not an herbivore once, and come up with a more peaceful culture and try that side of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I think we could move on from there. I think that was a good chat, and I'll probably get some good flaming comments for that little bit of a rant.
You said DRM.
Yeah.
All I need to do now is mention Darwin.
There you go.
I'm not even going to get in that, because I have heard some very interesting conversations about what the game actually represents, because you look at it from the first and say, oh man, this is all about science and evolution. Wow, that's cool. It's so very scientific and not messy and not religious or whatever. But then you take one more step back and you go, wait a minute, this game is about intelligent design.
Yeah. Well, have you seen the commercials, the television commercials for the game?
No.
I have been fast-forwarding through them. I apologize.
They even say, well, yeah, since I've been stuck with that at TiVo all week, I've actually had to watch them.
A geek dad's torture as hell.
But they even call it, they even mention it as create evolution or something like that. They mash the two words together and actually flaunt the fact that it has aspects of both in it in the commercial for the game.
Oh boy! So I don't want to. I'm not going to touch that.
We'll get letters. We'll get letters.
We get letters. Yeah. Well, so you know what? Let's move on to something else that has its own little imprint of trouble to it right now. A post that went up today by Matt Blum on our blog has gotten a huge amount of attention, and there have been a lot of other news stories about it too. The Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland will be powering up tomorrow, and there has been a lot of discussion hither and yon about whether or not when they actually start bashing particles with it, it might create a small black hole, and which could then go on to suck up the Earth and destroy us all. Which is, of course, alarmist nonsense. Of course, that doesn't mean it doesn't get press. And so Matt wrote what I thought was a pretty good article, both, you know, trying to, on a fairly straightforward terms, explain why, no, it, that problem is not going to happen, and two, also give us a little bit of a way to talk about it with our kids if it comes up. Because it's pretty hardcore science, and it would be more likely than not for a kid to hear something about, oh, somebody's going to turn on a machine that's going to destroy the Earth, and get a little worried about that. And much harder to sit down with a kid and go, okay, this is what the machine does, and no, it's not going to do, you know, that's not going to be a problem, and it's actually really cool and for science. But what's been really interesting is because this post by Matt, first thing this morning after it had gone up, for whatever serendipitous reason, it got picked up as a sort of featured link on Google News. So we started seeing a lot of readers hitting it at that point. So all through the morning, it was getting a lot of attention through that channel. And then in the afternoon, it hit the front page of Dig and started pulling a lot of eyeballs from that direction. And the comments that have been coming through on it have been, shall we say, interesting. And for those of our listeners, I think Russ and Pat can support, because they've probably had a couple of posts get some interesting comments.
Oh, just a few. Yeah.
Once again, I want to say this to all of our listeners. Please remember that before any of us got involved with Geek Dad, we were just guys. All right? Geeks and dads. I've worked in civil engineering and construction my whole life. And I know, Patrick, you're in, you know, the technical side of theater, and Russ, I don't remember what you said you do, but you know, the point being is that we're not writers, we're not journalists, or we haven't been, at least, and so we have gotten our eyes opened a little bit, having become bloggers, and you get some really interesting feedback every now and then, especially when one of your posts gets a lot of attention.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know. Have you guys had that experience?
Oh, yeah. You learn to get a thick skin real quick, because and you learn some of the buzzwords to try to, you know, you really can't tell when you first see a post whether they're being serious or whether they're being sarcastic. You know, sarcasm doesn't quite translate to the printed word as well as it, you know, can when you're, it's being delivered to you directly. So you know, it usually takes a second to figure out, you know, are they really believing what they're putting down here? What is this? It can be a little frightening sometimes. And the one that Matt shared with us this evening, a comment he got, that was emailed directly to him, was it not?
Yes, it was.
It
wasn't a comment on the blog. It was actually somebody emailed that directly to him, which makes it even more frightening, I think.
Right. So they took that one extra step. Instead of just hitting the comment thing at the bottom of the post, they actually went to the sidebar and found his contact email and sent it to him directly. So
yes.
Holy Toledo. Now I'm, I don't know that we should go as far as reading the thing.
No.
Lends, you know, that lends weight to it or whatever, but let's just we'll go to the point of view of a person writing in all caps
and bolding some parts.
And bolding some parts just to show that not only are they yelling at you, but they are yelling at you with emphasis in certain parts.
With feeling.
Once more, with feeling.
Yeah. the subject line of it was, "You idiot." And it devolved from there, getting to the...
Yeah, no, let's not go there, Ken. Yeah. Let's not go there.
I do have to mention the one humorous part was that they didn't seem to understand what the danger of the accelerator was. The, you know, everybody's been talking about it's, you know, they're bashing all these particles, and they're trying to replicate the conditions of the beginning of the universe, and there's this fear that they'll create a mini black hole and what that could do. This person seemed to not necessarily understand that, and think rather that once they started accelerating the particles in this giant ovoid, that it would somehow create a time portal. And that you should be cautious what you wish for, because you might step through a time portal back to Nazi Germany. So somehow they were able to invoke Godwin's law in the post without actually calling anyone a Nazi. It was kind of amusing.
Yeah, that was.
On Twitter today, as we were talking with the other Geek Dads about this, one of the things that came up was Brian Little. Made a comment on the post to try to bring some, I guess, sanity back to the picture.
Good luck, Brian.
But as I was thinking about it, it's fear of the unknown. It's nothing more than December 29th, 1999.
Yep.
Or if for your the asthma fans, the movie Contact or the book Contact, I guess. Where, when they were making this device that these aliens had given to, this alien race had given to Earth, you had people trying to sabotage it and were successful in sabotaging it. And, unfortunately, the person in the movie was smart enough to know that that would happen. So they made a second one halfway across the world. I think that's really when it comes down to it, is just fear of the unknown. And in some respects, I see that, because we don't know what's going to happen. It's probably going to be a whole lot of nothing. It's probably going to be, hyped well beyond all expectations, and anything that comes from it. Will we learn something from it? I bet we will. I'm sure we will learn something
from
it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But, end of the world, doomsday, if that's going to happen, I'm leaving the podcast now so I can get toilet paper and bottled water.
I agree completely with what you're saying. I mean, the first thing that popped into my mind was, this is the Y2K of this year. This is the hype machine about doomsday and the end of the world. I have a kind of an interesting take on this, because I've been following this for a while. My wife used to work actually in the travel office of what is now the Jefferson Laboratory in. Virginia, which at the time she was working for it, it was called CBAF, the Continuous Electron Beam Accelerator Facility.
Uh-huh.
And she was dealing with a lot of physicists from CERN were popping back and forth between this facility and CERN and, several other accelerators around the world. So, having her be, talk to these people and learn what they, this has been in the works for quite some time.
Oh, yeah.
And especially after they canceled the accelerator here in Texas years ago, this was it. This is the big guy, and this is gonna I think it's gonna really open up some new fields in subatomics. But we'll have to see what comes up. Doomsday, I don't think so.
No, and you know what, the probably the most, I don't know, not necessarily the most disturbing, but the most bemusing part of many of these comments were people literally saying, they're meddling with things that man was not supposed to know.
Yeah, all I kept thinking, and this is probably going to show my age, but all I kept thinking of when I saw that statement was that old margarine commercial from way back where they say, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
That's the
Oh, my gosh.
I'm sorry. It's just getting a little too, Spanish Inquisition-y for me that,
it's just... But no one expected the Spanish Inquisition.
Exactly. Let's just stop trying to figure things out, because
it'll all be okay if we get them the comfy chair.
Exactly. All right. So we've probably expressed enough treasonable offenses in this that little rant.
Other three listeners.
Right.
Exactly. And if it does start a black hole, then I don't have to worry about this hurricane coming at me. So there's an upside.
Well, or maybe we learn how to create miniature black holes to help dissipate the energy of hurricanes.
Hey, there you go.
There you go. Either way, you need to run to the store right now and get your toilet paper and bottled water. Because
do you think they could show that on Weather Underground? You know, the effects of a small black hole on the in the middle
so
of
the. We've got to create an algorithm.
We'll do that. We'll do that.
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right, I think that's enough.
Those are good two rants.
All right, why don't we do some posts of the week, and move it on out of here. Russ, what did you want to do for a post of the week?
I wanted to pull up Brad Moon's post from, was it yesterday now? Today's the 9th, yes. So it was from yesterday, September 8th. 8 arguments that will fail to get you a new flat screen TV. I just loved it because, you know, I could see myself in too many of these, and I could see responses from my wife in some of these. But I will just say up front, you know, we moved. My wife says, "Hey, we need a new TV for the living room," and she was totally all right with getting a big flat screen TV. So, other than just the humor value alone, and seeing real life geek family talk in the 8 reasons that failed to get you a new flat screen TV, it was just a great post. Now, did it make the front page of Google News? No. This one was just, this shows real life in a geek dad family, which is really what I liked about it.
Yeah, big time. I have to say, I am so happy that my wife is a technology enabler. And this is the story that I love to tell because I still completely blame this on her, was that we had gone down to the Cambridge Soundworks outlet store because we needed to replace a couple of speakers that my son had inadvertently blown out when he had turned the volume on the amplifier all the way up to high and then turned on the amplifier.
Oh.
And
this one goes to 11.
This would hundred.
This one goes to 12, I think.
Yeah, and what was sad was a couple of these speakers were classic, not really expensive, but they had been Zenith kits that, like, my father and my grandfather had put together.
Mm. Oh, nice.
I mean, they were in crappy visual condition, but they were really solid old speakers. I mean, it's like walnut construction and.
Sound by the pound, yeah.
Oh, yeah, big time. So it was a little bit sad. So you know, we go down there, and we had the credit card check with us that was going to get us a low APR on getting a couple, you know, we were going to get some decent speakers. And so we get there, and my wife's eyes start going wide. And we are a home entertainment family. And by the end of the entire affair, we did have the complete new surround sound system with the new amplifier, with the 51-inch Sony Wega, the DLP TV, and the furniture to go with it, and the sound conditioner. And
so, Super Bowl party at Ken's house.
Oh, yeah. You got to say, man, the video games look really good on that TV.
Nice.
And I think we'll have it paid off soon. So.
You don't have to sell the children for medical experiments to pay for your technology.
Not much more of them. No.
Yeah. Ken's donating plasma on the weekends.
Right.
That's true. Do I look pale to you? So there's pluses and minuses to getting what you hope for.
Yeah, and you know there really are. You can go Russ's opinion completely and nutso overboard on your electronics.
Yeah.
However, you know, lugging around, even in my the old TV that I had. It's now the game TV. It's in the basement. It's going to stay in the basement till it dies. And when it dies, me and the boys are going to take it apart and we're going to learn the inner workings of really old TVs.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because I'm not moving that thing again.
So you can take it out piece by piece.
Absolutely.
I like that.
Just whatever you do, degauss the CRT before you let them touch it.
Good point.
There you go.
All right, Patrick, what do you got for us?
Well, I have another Matt Blum post that I was reading and just having a great time with. It was the 10 movies needing a Muppet remake from the end
hilarious.
Of last week. That just made me laugh. The picture, of course, that he put on the front was, you know, of Animal as the Terminator in Terminator 2, which is just hilarious. And just the mental image of Animal saying, "Come with me if you want to live," you know.
You know what? He was a little down on himself about his Photoshop skills there, but in a way, it worked so well. I mean, the scale was just right.
Yeah.
Animal's head on.
Sarah Connor. Sarah Connor. it made me chuckle.
Yeah.
Everything is better if it's interpreted by Muppets, I think. You know,
you had to like some of the comments there too, because people were getting quite passionate about which Muppet should play which character in which movie.
Oh yeah,
so it was
really
good.
Important things. These are important.
I do want to point out I put up on the dig comments. I really thought you do Muppet Lord of the Rings.
Right, right.
Yeah. So Kermit is Aragorn, Piggy is Arwen, Scooter is Frodo,
right.
Fozzie is Samwise.
Yeah, that's a good
Sam
one.
Sam the Eagle is Saruman, Ralph is Gandalf, Gonzo is Sméagol, and and you're
working. Which part does the Swedish chef play?
I think he's Celeborn.
That could work.
Yeah.
Could work.
I had Link as Boromir and and Floyd as Faramir. two great geeky tastes that taste great together.
Yeah, I like it.
That was an awesome post. All right, I'll round out the group tonight. And this one actually comes from today, but it sort of struck a chord in me, sort of in a way. Just Chris's post, which admittedly I actually changed the title to when we put it up because this, but I think this one worked really well. Was how to hack a white noise generator to help your baby sleep. Now, first of all, especially for new dads, hopefully this will be important information for you to learn. You know, I think when we were growing up and for a while after that, it was always, oh, be quiet around the baby, don't wake the baby, all of that stuff. And it's really been nice to see that go by the wayside. And we tried to practice the other side of it very strongly, is that no, don't be quiet around the baby, be noisy around the baby. Especially if you've got white noise, some form of white noise, either actual, you know, the static sounds or other natural repetitious droning noises going on, it actually helps them because it makes them get used to sleeping when there is noise around them. It helps make it so that the little noises that are always happening in a home don't startle them. You know, they're actually just something little small and drowned out by whatever you've got going on. It really works so much better. And I think if you do that as a little baby, you know, you'll grow up being less, you know, less prone to having problems sleeping and always, you know, going to bed and hearing every little creak in your house and every little noise outside, and it really won't stress you out that much. And so the suggestion here was the guy made a 10-second recording of water running in a sink, took it into something like Audacity or GarageBand, and copied and pasted it to make an hour-long sound file and burned a CD on it and put it in the CD player and ran it on repeat. And there was his perfect white noise generator for his son, and it worked perfectly.
Yeah, I thought that was great, too. My daughter spent many an evening in the little carrying seat on top of the dryer.
Yes. Oh, we did that. We did that, yes.
And that was you know, it was either that or driving, you know, around the block and, you know, just,
it would,
you know,
take miles.
Takes, yeah, too much gasoline.
And you couldn't afford it.
Right.
You
exactly.
would just have
right.
to stay awake.
Exactly.
And you know, and with our fourth, we didn't do any of that. We actually took one of the white noise generator devices. You plug it in, you turn a switch, and you can, it would just hum. It would, you know,
right.
just, you know, put out the white noise. when that thing broke, oh man. I mean, it was small enough that you could throw it in the suitcase, but you'd better darn well make sure it's in the suitcase before you leave the house.
Oh yeah. And now, and what this also brought to mind is, if you go look on iTunes right now, if you have an iPod Touch or an iPhone, one of the 10 most popular apps that are available now for it is something called Ambience. And Ambience is basically an application that is a white noise generator for your iPhone or your iPod Touch. And so let's see. Wait. Oh, darn it. I turned my phone off here. If I turn this up, it's probably going to go beeping on the, make the cell noise on the recording here. But I got to do this. What's cool, it started out with about 10 or 12 sounds when it first came out. And it had a couple of rain sounds, and it has literal white noise, pink noise generations, which is certain wavelengths of sounds that just sound like static to you at different pitches. And then, wind sounds, a creek sound, a waterfall sound, things like that. And what's been really good about it, you buy it, I forget whether it was a $5.99 or a $9.99 application. But the fellow has updated it three times since it first came out. First of all, adding on a timer so you can set it to go off when you want it to. And then he's added a ton of noises to it. So at this point, the number of white noise sounds, it's above 20 now. Airplane, birds, blue noise, brown noise, cat purr, cicadas, clock, city sounds, coastal sounds, creeks, crickets, fans, oscillating fans. And the specifications are really interesting. Big fire, small fire, freeway, frog, heartbeat fast, heartbeat slow, lightsaber, machine, owl, pink noise. And what I love is the variations of rains. Rain on a car. A light rain, rain on a porch, rain on a tin roof, rain with thunder, rain with wind. Things like, I mean, just all the possible little variations. And all they are 5 to 10 second expertly crafted sound loops. So if you sit there and you really listen to some of them, you can sort of pick up on the repetition, but it's not noticeable enough to actually turn you off to the sound. If you've got an iPhone dock or whatever in your house, that's going to be your perfect answer for that white noise generator for your baby. And I'll be honest, I'm using it.
So this is how Ken falls asleep at night.
This is how Ken now falls asleep. This has improved my sleep because I turn it on. I actually listen with little earbuds in. I go to sleep with little earbuds in. And I've got it on. I think the rain on the porch, and it's just as if it were raining outside, and you've got your window open. That peaceful, peaceful sound, and I fall asleep. I used to be the kind of person that takes me 15 or 20 minutes, maybe tossing, turning, whatever, to fall asleep. I fall asleep in 5 minutes now, and I am having more dreams than everything, and I'm getting longer, sounder sleeps. Just because of this, and I can't explain it, but it's been totally wonderful. So, I'm totally hooked on that, and it's sort of like the great sort of more techie, more geeky version of this sound loop CD, but sort of the same idea.
Did you say one of the things on that thing was brown noise?
Yes, it did say brown noise.
It did say brown noise. Wow.
Let's see. Do you know what brown noise is?
Isn't brown noise the frequency that's supposed to make you lose control of your bowels?
I would hope not.
Or was that just...
Well, but if you use that with your baby, it wouldn't...
No, that was matter. The... That was the yeah, well, you know, no, there was...
Or was that just an episode of South Park?
No, that was... There was actually when the... delving only very slightly into politics.
Did you guys hear that?
During...
That's the brown noise.
Okay, that's
it's a fairly low static frequency.
There was, gotcha. but Patrick, there was. I remember reading something about some of the people who were planning protests at the Democratic National Convention in Denver were afraid that the Denver police had worked with the federal government to get their ultra low frequency devices, whatever. Such that there was a brown ray, which would basically make them lose control of their bowels.
Wow. Science at work.
Yeah. It sounds like Ken's in the bathroom now, so.
Yeah.
I'll be back. There we go. Oh, I got to save that one anytime somebody tries to tell a joke.
Oh, yeah. So anyone got anything else to say? Crickets.
Crickets.
Oh, I'm saving that. That's awesome. All right. Well, I think that's that'll do us for the eve.
I think so.
Well,
I
just wanted to say about the post that you were just mentioning about the white noise generator. I won't spoil it by explaining what the picture is, but it's worth it for everybody listening to look at the front, look at the page, or the post about the white noise generator, just to see the picture of the baby in the onesie. That's all I'm going to say. But it's worth it for a look. Go check out the Geek Dad page to see it. It's hilarious.
And the couple of jokey comments underneath it.
Yes.
Yes, that was very good. All right. You guys got anything you want to pitch that's coming up in the next week? Any posts you got in your head?
Well, I'm thinking about doing a post about being a Luddite for the past 3 weeks, and just it's been worse than anything. You know, I've not having my technology has just been
the trials of Job. Being a geek dad without his technology.
Yeah. And this is coming from a guy that used to smoke cigarettes for 20 years and quit that. And this has been far worse. It's been far worse than addiction.
I can bet. How about you, Russ?
Insert your cricket noise here. I don't have anything.
All righty. Well, let's see. I'm trying to think. We got anything good coming up? No, not that I can think of. There's always good stuff coming up. There's always good stuff coming up. So keep an eye out. All right then. I'm just going to thank everybody for listening and continuing to tune in. And once again, our apologies to the folks that actually like to show up for the live broadcast. Really going to work at getting that straightened out, because I really think it's a fun feature, and especially last time we actually really got some interactivity going with the folks in the chat room. So we will.
Yeah.
We promise. We're going to try and get that perfected and make it work. Otherwise than that, please remember, if you've got any comments you want to make to us, any suggestions, email at wired.geekdad@gmail.com. And if you want to, leave a voice comment there. I believe that's possible through the various magic parts of Gmail. And you might get it right on the air, or get it actually run on the air. So either that is an inducement, or we'll make sure we never get any comments whatsoever. I'm not sure. Other than that, I'll just say I'm Ken Denmead, editor of GeekDad.com. I'm going to thank Patrick Orndorff. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Ken. Pleasure as always.
All right. And Mr. Russ Neumeier, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sir.
Thank you. It's been a good time.
And everybody take care out there, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Have a good one, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Later. Geek Dad.